Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. Making up the group this morning, let me introduce them to you. It's Friday the 13th and we're all very excited to be here. It's better than that. It's Valentine's Day Eve.
It's Friday the 13th and it's really cold, and as soon as this is over, I'm going home back under the covers in bed. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'd like to apologize to all the Templars who died on this date many, many hundreds of years ago.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. Making up the panel this morning, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Oh, you sound awful.
Well, I am awful.
Oh, boy.
No. You sound like it hurts to talk, but hopefully it doesn't.
No, it's okay.
All right.
It's okay.
Good.
No, it doesn't.
SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Hello.
Good morning. And WAMC's Ray Graff.
Good morning.
Very nice to you.
Was that a shot, Ray?
No, it was not.
Some way where I like to tell the truth. Kitty Carlisle hearts on her third question, and they're trying to disguise her voice.
That's an old reference.
That's a very old
Kitty
reference.
Kitty Carlisle, man. Yeah. Who's going to know that?
Well, I went with that instead of Peggy Cass, yeah. Bill Cullen, Alan. Yeah,
Joe Garagiola.
That's right. And Gary Moore, your host.
That's right.
Okay, they're talking about an ancient TV program. It came on right after they took wrestling off.
It's the best we got.
Let's talk about...
They took wrestling off?
We need some young blood on this show.
Sad, isn't it? Sad. All right, so let's... a bunch of things we can talk about. I guess we'll go with this story first, and that is the... Rosemary pointed this out to me, but it's you know, I mean, we knew this, but boy, what a crummy week in journalism.
Wow.
So we lost David Carr last night.
David Carr, the media critic for the New York Times. You know, he is a superlative writer and reporter, but his own personal story is what made it so amazing. He was a terrible addict. He was a cocaine addict. You knew he was going to die young, but this was way too young. He's 58, just collapsed in the newsroom about 9 o'clock last night, and he was dead by the time he was at the hospital.
After doing a Times event.
A big Times event. They had Citizen 4, which is the Edward Snowden story, and he hosted it and had the makers and the creators of that there, and apparently did a superlative job. Wrote a great article that was in the Monday New York Times
about
Brian Williams, right. Big loss.
We had him on for when he wrote his book about...
Mm-hmm. His life.
About his life, and even in that book said... You know, if you read this in 5 years and I die of an overdose or, you know, don't, like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, he was a
very
hard addict.
By the way, there's no evidence of that.
No. It looks like it was heart, which could well indeed be an after effect of the abuse he did to his body. But he was this lovely man with a great attitude towards life, which is, I'm having a great time. All you can do is hope it doesn't end too soon. And, of course, it did for him.
Yeah, and, of course, it was.
And very explicit in that he defended them, and I think Sulzberger came out with a major paying to the guy, and I think Rosemary, I'd love to know a little bit more, because I'm so fascinated by the fact that some people are extolled this way, and apparently he deserved it. And some people are never forgiven for their earlier lives. So what do you think that was all about?
That's a really interesting point. I think it was his great compassion. He fell as low as a man can go. An anecdote in his book that he talked about over and over again was he had twin daughters. His wife was also a drug dealer. Leaves the little kids in the car as he goes in to, you know, make his drug deal. And you don't get much lower than that. And so he exposed it all himself. And somehow that his having known the depths made him more understanding of everyone else, including Brian Williams, by the way. His last piece is he doesn't apologize for him. He sort of tries to explain him. And I think that's something about Carr that came through in all of his work.
Don't you think talent plays
he's,
too?
He's
I
really,
mean, you know,
really
you
talented.
Talk about what brings you to the next level of being able to, you know, get to add
get another
a chapter to your life, and it was great talent.
He was an amazing writer. Anybody who hasn't looked at his work, get his book or look him up on the New York Times. It's totally worth the time.
David Carr passed away last night at in New York City. And again, of course, when we talk about a bad week, it was
Bob
Simon passed away
before.
Too. And then, of course, the story earlier of both Brian Williams and John Stewart leaving their posts for very different reasons. All right, let's go on to another story. And we have a new defense secretary. And there wasn't a lot of yelling and screaming.
No.
Ashton Carter was confirmed as defense chief, replacing Chuck Hagel. Alan, what do you make of the move?
Well, I think that it was quite clear that the president decided he had to find somebody who would be acceptable to the Republicans, and he found them. This guy had, I believe, the number two job before. He was well-liked and well-respected. This is not the one where there's going to be hell to pay. So it went through, it went flying through. And it gives the Republicans a chance, of course, to say, "Well, you see, if you are accommodating, we'll go along, and we're not as obstructionist as you guys are always saying we are."
And then
the one that is held
Loretta
to pay,
Lynch.
Yes, is the Attorney General candidate. Her hearings, vote on her candidacy, has been delayed again. So, and the dispute, oddly enough, is not over her. She's actually a very good candidate also, but they don't like the current office holder, Eric Holder, and she seems to be a scapegoat for all that he did. Which seems pretty obstructionist to me, to use a word that's annoying Republicans and some of our listeners.
Okay.
Now, remind me, Loretta Lynch is of color?
Yes.
She is.
She would be if appointed the first black attorney general woman.
Right, right. So therefore, once again, the Republicans in this kind of obstructionism, it seems to me, risk one more group just hating their guts. We have the immigration issue with Hispanics. Now we have this. It's as if they don't recognize what's happening in this country, how things are changing.
That's a really good point. Once again, they look like the real heavies in this, don't they?
And
They do. Yeah.
Obviously, the
Democrats. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying the Democrats have certainly been quite, especially Senator Leahy, saying that they're a needless delay in putting off of Lynch's hearings. So we will hear more about that, I'm sure. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk more. We have many other issues to discuss. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me get to, let's see, I was just checking to see if we have any letters. Do you see anything there, Alan?
We do.
Okay,
yeah, we have
go.
Two letters.
All right.
Okay. One is from LL, who says, "By all accounts, once he was clean, he was a lovely person as well as a brilliant journalist. How depressing to think that one cannot escape the consequence of past mistakes." That's an interesting idea, isn't it, guys? Because, you know, there are a lot of people sitting in prison who have not been allowed that. For exactly the same kinds of things. That's why the Rockefeller drug laws were dealt with a couple of years ago. Then we heard from Gary, who is our expert on German on the air. You remember him?
Yes.
"Please don't fire," in quotes, "Alan because of his voice problems today." He actually almost sounds like he's speaking German. Regards, Gary from Woodstock.
Very guttural language, and, yes.
That's pretty funny.
And then there's a long thing about the pajama lady.
The pajama
really
lady.
Remember yesterday we talked a lot about the pajama lady.
The underwriting woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes,
right,
the NPR right, under. Right.
What is the pajama lady?
I didn't know she was now being referred to as the pajama lady.
Well, you always say the pajamas. The pajamas. Get the pajamas from it, which really drives me nuts.
The pajama.
There are all kinds of people who have all kinds of definitional issues about the way they say things. For example, when Garrison Keillor was sitting in my office one day, and I said to him, what's this almanac thing? And he said, what, isn't that the way you pronounce it? As if he had never been told that before.
Almanac, almanac.
In Albany.
After all those years.
Albany.
Okay, so Deborah says, annoying is obviously in the ear of the listener. While the pronunciation of pajama grates on me, nothing else about her voice did. And then goes on and on and on. Okay, so we're going to leave it at that. Everybody, look, there are people who don't like my voice. There are people who don't like Pat Bradley's voice. But, you know, we take those criticisms with in the way that they are intended. Meanly, don't we, Joe?
Yeah, we just become bitter.
No.
Yeah, that's all.
No.
Just adds to the bitterness, that's
Many
all.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game.
That's right.
And Michael says, hope you will address pedestrian safety in light of yesterday's horrible accident.
Well,
and boy, everybody around WAMC is walking around just depressed about this.
Yeah, you know, I was going to, I didn't know whether to talk about the story or not. I have to say, just and not to, you know, overly internalize this, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I think everybody here, it was an awful day yesterday. Many of us were, you know, outside and not maybe saw it happen, but were there as it was happening. And it was just very traumatic and horrible. And I don't know, it seems to me we still don't know a lot. I think
you should explain what we're talking about.
There was an accident that took place yesterday right out in front of our studios. We were at the corner of Quail and Central in downtown Albany, and Central Avenue is a very busy major thoroughfare in the city of Albany and has been given a reputation of being a rather dangerous thoroughfare as well. Yesterday, a young child and his mother were crossing in the crosswalk. All of what I'm about to say is from the official police reports of what we know of what is being reported to us. Crossing in the crosswalk with the light, and there was a truck that was on Quail Street turning left into Central, a garbage truck, it was a very large truck,
yep.
and struck the boy, 4 years old, a preschool student, on his way to preschool, and who was killed, and so it was a tragic accident. And there's a lot to talk about of pedestrian safety. Obviously, there's a lot, as our letter writer mentions. We also got another letter from another listener who was asking a question about. That it was never really fully explained how, you know, if the mother suffered any injuries and,
she was hit, but then there's no further word
right.
on what happened.
So, and they haven't released the
right.
name of the mother or of the child. So, there's still a lot out there. And, other than that, I don't really know what else we can say at this point, other than it's a horrible tragedy. And until we find out what exactly happened,
when you're in the news business, you yeah. report on these things all the time
right.
and you have a disconnected feeling about them because you know, if any town this happens, you read the story. But when you are there and you see it, then you realize it's real. It's not reading a story. It is.
It's very real.
You feel the pain on the street today.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody is, you know, I think quieter than normal. And it's, it's very sad. And, of course, it deals with a child. And it's so I think that obviously adds to all of us who've lived here and worked on this street for a long time are no strangers to horrible incidents taking place on this street. But when they involve a young child of 4 years old, oh, my God. You know,
I would just like to point out that the media covering this are not invading privacy. They're not purveyors of gore and violence and sensationalism. This is the stuff that newspapers and other media ought to be covering. It's this inexplicable loss and how you cope with it. You have to feel sorry for both the driver, who certainly could not have intended to kill a 4-year-old, and the mother who was there holding the hand of the child as it was struck. This is human tragedy. It's the stuff of literature, unfortunately, of life, and it ought to be in journalism, too.
We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah,
I'm just going to take a quick break, Alan. We can continue as soon as we come back. The roundtable will continue after this short break next. I'm sorry, what is it again? What's the model number?
My wah-wah pedal is a Dunlop 535Q. I don't know what that one was. That was probably an original Crybaby, but don't you love the wah-wah?
Yeah, during the break, Ray was telling us all about his wah-wah pedal.
Yeah.
Felt very lucky.
Wow, the 535Q.
I learned so much on this show.
I know, it's fascinating, isn't it?
You don't put a wah-wah pedal on a banjo.
I was going to say, one has to take very good care of their wah-wah pedal.
Yes.
Especially as you age. Yes.
Keep it lubed up and all. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. By the way, Joe, if it's all right, I just want to mention that our friend, our pal, Lee Meringoff of the NBC Marist poll just sent us a poll which shows that the American people are in favor of Obama's request to go after ISIS. And in fact, that they think ground forces would be appropriate. Boots on the ground would be appropriate. But my only comment would be, of course, that's the way they always start when the kids go marching off. Then after a while, it stops being as sure.
Rosemary?
Well, I revoice my opinion about polls. I don't know what the question was or how it was asked.
To know? Because I can tell you.
Yeah, let me hear the wording of this.
At least I think I can tell you. A poll conducted in the hours following President Barack Obama's appeal to see U.S. military forces against ISIS, 54% of Americans say they are for their congressperson authorizing such action. To what extent U.S. ground forces should be used? Are Americans confident in President Obama's plan, and what impact will his request have on the legacy? And those were all the questions that were taken in the poll.
I mean, it's pretty vague, and I just don't think it means very much. We don't have the money for an extended extended force into the Middle East. We don't have a clear target with ISIS. Where are we attacking? What are we going to do? It's a mess.
Well. The American people don't want to sit back, Rosemary, and see the kind of beheadings and things that have been going on. But then there's a deeper question, and that is, we have about a huge part of the budget is the defense budget. And in order to keep that part of the military, congressional, whatever process going, you have to have a rationale for spending that money. And it seems to me that this is what has always kept this country going, which is that a huge part of the way we do things is an investment into the so-called defense establishment. I think we have to start thinking about how to change that, but I think you can't ignore that part of it.
Well, as far as the beheadings and burning people alive, that's a really carefully calculated and manipulative propaganda war by ISIS. I hate to see us fall to it. That's getting embroiled there is exactly what I think the enemy wants. It's just such a bad move. And as for, you know, American people thinking what they want and keeping us going, they want everything. They want us to be a policeman around the world, and they want full employment and more than minimum benefits here, but they don't want to pay the taxes that would support that, all of that. So, okay, you can say anything on a poll. Let's, like, make it happen. It can't be done.
There is an interesting point to the poll, just at least I found this interesting. Have you heard or read anything about President Obama? This is the first question they asked. Have you read or heard anything about President Obama's request to Congress to authorize U.S. military force against ISIS, the Islamic State group, or not? 69% responded yes. 31% responded no. That's better than I would have thought.
Much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you go to the numbers that we mentioned a moment ago, 54% to the specific question, do you want your member of Congress to vote for or against this authorization? 54% for, 32% against, and 13% unsure.
Gosh. I don't get it. I mean, if you want to go to war in Ukraine, where we have a defined target, we have an implacable enemy, we could make a difference there. ISIS, I don't know.
You could also, you know, set up an incredible confrontation with a nuclear force. And we don't know just how crazy Putin is on all of that. So I think we pick our targets based on, we're saying we don't want to go into the Russian thing. It's too dangerous. But this is defined as not being as dangerous, I guess.
So let's go to then
Want to go to a letter?
Well, you can go to a letter, and then we'll talk a little bit about Afghanistan as we're talking about war and our involvement.
Well, this will in fact be a good segue. As a veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq with the 82nd Airborne Division, my heart breaks that we're still doing this, that my fellow countrymen are so willing to send someone else's kid to die. ISIS wants us there. It's a good business for them. Shame on the Nobel Peace President for calling populism and passing the buck to the next administration. That's from Corey. And Don Steiner, our regular correspondent, people are for boots on the ground until the boots belong to their kids. And Eric says, when has it ever been an issue whether we have the money to wage war? The cost will be grossly underestimated. The Republicans will forget about their precious paygo, and the veterans will continue to be underserved. And that's from Eric in Rhinebeck.
Yeah, Eric is right. We forgot about the cost when we went barging into Iraq, and we are paying the price for that now.
I do want to, as I mentioned and Alan mentioned, so let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan. A story in the New York Times today about the U.S. is escalating a secretive war in Afghanistan. Data from Seas Computer fuels a surge in U.S. raids on al-Qaeda. American military officials said the intelligence seized in the raid was possibly as significant as the information found in the computer and documents of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan after members of the Navy SEALs killed him in 2011. Again, there is some question of, I guess, this laptop computer and files detaining Al-Qaeda operations on both sides of the border. And so now we go into this question of, well, are we out of Afghanistan? Where are we? What is our situation?
Look, I would like to point out
that it's really hard to figure out
this cache of information that has led to effective and targeted strikes against the enemy.
Night raids.
Right. Did not come from torture. We did not torture people to get this. We conducted a raid and it fell into our hands. And now it's being used in the way that very reliable intelligence can be used. That's a point I want to make. You don't get Al-Qaeda or any enemy through torture.
So my question is, Alan, this spike in raids is obviously at odds with the policy of the Obama administration saying that the American role in the war is essentially over.
Yes, and to Rosemary's point, which is, of course, a good one, is the question of how do we know? I mean, one of the things that bothers me, and if I'm Rosemary, I'm saying now, that's where good American journalism comes in, as it did in this case, to say that this, you know, that this is where we get the information and that we are doing these raids. But we don't know. And because we don't know, we can not function as a democracy sometimes and do it other times. So how we don't know who got tortured. We never have. We don't know how they got, you know, how they got the material in the first place. But in any case, I think the American people have to know what we're doing. And I don't know that we are.
That I agree with. We would know if the torture report that Congress spent years at our cost putting together had been released in its entirety. Even the part that's redacted that came out points really strongly to the idea that torture did not result in reliable information. And this cache of information, as I said, I remember when they found it, and there were lots of stories in the press then about how excited everyone was. It's a whole hard drive of information and contacts, and that's the sort of thing that results in good raids, not torturing people.
You know, we heard from Andy, who said, if we want the U.S. to take pause before we enter another war, bring back the draft.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who think that we are disconnected from the Iraq war because it's all volunteers.
Right.
And for the movers and shakers in this country who are upper class and upper middle class, it's not our sons going. So what do we care? And the way we conduct the war by borrowing money for it and going into debt, we're not even paying a tax for it. So who's going to do the lobbying to stop the fighting? Who? Like little talk show hosts like us.
So the little talk show hosts are going to take a break, and we're going to eat our milk and cookies so we can become big talk show hosts. We'll be back after.
Some of us already are.
We'll be back after this. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have the following people represented here this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, WAMC's Ray Graff. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments at roundtable@wamc.org. In an unusually frank and personal speech, FBI Director James Comey, thank you, on Thursday addressed hard truths about policing, acknowledging racial bias among law enforcement officers, and lamenting a disconnect between police agencies and communities of color. He said, quote, "We are at a crossroads. As a society, we can choose to live our lives every day, raising our families, going to work, and hoping someone somewhere will do something to ease the tension, to smooth over the conflict, or we can choose instead to have an open and honest discussion about what our relationship is today."
Well, I love the speech. I read it, and I applaud him for saying it. It took courage, and it points us in a really good direction. It's not defensive. It doesn't defend anybody. He's saying, we got to sit down and talk about this, which has been kind of blatantly obvious for much of this year. And I just hope that police don't respond by turning their backs on him.
What are the chances of that, do you think?
You know, acting towards him as they did towards de Blasio in New York, who said something very similar.
Right.
He has a lot of clout, and it's a national stage, and he's getting applause from the NAACP and other established groups. So I hope it will do some good.
Alan?
Yeah, well, look, we have a problem. The question is, are we going to talk about the real problem? We're classist in this country. We are racist. There's no two ways about it. And our prisons are filled with people overwhelmingly who are, black or Hispanic. And the police, we ask our police department to go into that mix and to make arrests and to watch out for themselves at the same time. So it's not only doing what we have to do to understand this, that a cop pulls out a gun in a stairwell and shoots without knowing who he's shooting at. But it's much more than that. It's understanding why we have created an underclass that obviously, in the end, is overwhelmingly represented in our crime statistics. It goes very far.
That sounds like blaming the victims. I think we also should look at why we've created a class of police who act as if they're military in a foreign country when they're in our own cities.
Yeah, look, and as much as I love you and respect you, that's a cheap shot. The fact of the matter is that we have a racist society. We do. We have created it. So it goes much further than the cop who is on the beat. It goes to the very essence of what we have done economically and classically, and that is why we have to really have that conversation that he's calling for. It is a courageous conversation if we're going to do it. And I have a feeling he'll say it, he'll get patted on the back, and we won't do much more about it than what we've done.
Well, just to have a conversation is a good thing. I, of course, disagree that I made a cheap shot. I feel sincerely that what's going on is a police force that's militarized and increasingly trained to see people in a city who are their co-citizens as the enemy, and that is that's adding to problems. We've always had, unfortunately, problems with a lower class that generates more criminals, but we have not had shootings in the streets as we've had in the past year. That comes from changes in the police force, not changes or unchanges, an unchanging problem with a lower class.
I would respectfully disagree with you. I think we have had those shootings, and we have had that violence, and I don't disagree with you that we have created a force, but we have said to them, you go out there and you protect everybody. Now, look, we know that black-on-black crime is the largest amount of crime that we have in our major cities. So it isn't as if these white guys, and increasingly people of color who are on the police department, go out there and do this. They have to go out there and they have to protect everybody. So it isn't only the white guys against the black guys. It's the black people in our cities who are most at risk as a result of crime, and we know that.
Well, actually, and the FBI director pointed this out yesterday, we don't really know that because no statistics are kept on police shootings. We cannot say definitively how many cops have shot civilians because that statistic is not kept.
I'm not talking about, yeah.
So, okay, the full extent of the problem that I'm talking about isn't even known yet. And that's one of the things that the director was talking about that needs
to be addressed. I'm not only talking about black crime, about black shootings. I'm talking about crime. I'm talking about who the victims of crime are. And we know that. That we do know. And we do know that it's overwhelmingly people of color who are the victims of crime within some of these very neighborhoods where police are at the greatest risk. Look, I'm never gonna say it's okay for a policeman to go shoot somebody. It certainly wasn't okay for, it got so bad that this young policeman who shoots somebody in the stairwell without even knowing who he's shooting is indicted. Now that is something you're not seeing much of. You didn't see it in the Garner case. You didn't see it in other places. So I think there is an increasing consciousness that people have to be held, the police in particular have to be held responsible.
All right, let's move on to one other topic before we have to go. Before we do that, do you want to do some letters, Alan?
Okay, this comes from Thea, who says, hello, Alan. I just wanted to plant a notion. I just dropped an email to Mayor Sheehan, prompted by the horrible death of the little boy yesterday right outside the windows. I've been meaning to contact her for a while. Okay. I wonder if you might consider WMC taking a role in conversing with the officials that try to sort out the problems and perhaps some solutions. I did edit that because it went over our numbers, Joe. Okay.
Didn't we have
I think 8 months ago we had a
forum at the
forum with the Times Union and the City of Albany and WAMC put together a forum on this very subject and talked about it at great length. So, but I'm sure I know those conversations will continue.
Look, stand out in front of WAMC and watch people cross in the middle of the street. Right? Am I wrong? And goes on and on and on. I have been guilty of it myself because it's a long block and there are restaurants across the street, but it's also stupid. Also, people are allowed to make right turns on Central Avenue onto Quail when the light is of different colors. And I have been stopped short. I'm going on a green light. Somebody's coming around the corner just like yesterday and going way too fast. In fact, one day, going way too fast, I'm crossing with the light, and the guy who's coming around the corner gives me the finger because I'm in his way. So there's a lot of anger out there, and that kind of thing is what we ought to be talking about. And let's see, John says, it is not just our police who have become militarized. Look at the average family car. It has become big enough to invade Iraq. America aspiration used to be represented by the Cadillac, and now it is the Humvee, and on. And people still want to talk about the pajama lady.
Right. I assume we're done with the pajama lady, though, yeah. Right? Are we?
We're done with the pajama
lady.
No
good things can come of continuing that conversation.
No. But I hear Pajamagram is a lovely gift.
Yeah.
This Valentine's Day.
I heard they have a special.
Yeah, the little footy pajamas.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good. They terrific. Even have them glow in the dark, I heard.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No.
I'm not happy.
No. All right.
No.
Let's end the conversation by talking about, we didn't mention the story this week and or yesterday, and we meant to. European leaders hoping to avert the infusion of U.S. weapons into the Ukraine conflict heralded a new ceasefire agreement Thursday after marathon negotiations with the Russian and Ukrainian presidents. But the peace plan's success hinges on the combatants delivering on promises that they made and broken before. Rosemary, how positive are you, or how confident are you that this will stick in any way, shape, or form?
I think the ceasefire will stick for two reasons. One, Putin has sought it, and he's in trouble, and he really wants it. And two, because the economic sanctions from the West, which are really doing the damage, are still in place, and they will be tightened and heightened if he breaks the ceasefire. And why not? He's gotten everything he really wanted. I said from the beginning he wants what I think he'd be happy with all of Ukraine, but what he really wanted was a strip of eastern Ukraine, which he has. The ceasefire says that will be a demilitarized zone, basically. And then in order for Ukraine to claim the whole area, they have to give all kinds of freedom to eastern Ukraine, which splits it and weakens it, and it will never become a part of NATO.
He wins again.
That's his win, yeah.
Are you sure he doesn't want Moldova, by the way, while we're talking about what he wants? I don't know what he wants, but I know one thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, he already has Moldova. I mean, it completely works in lockstep with Russia.
Yeah, but the point is the Moldovans are worried about more. So we don't really know whether he wants to have the old Soviet Union recreated, which is what a lot of people think Putin is all about.
When it comes to the next step, I mean, obviously there's still a great deal of work that needs to be done. Rosemary, what do you think ultimately we here in the United States should be doing?
Well, I mean, I've already said that if you were going to conduct a war, this is a place, a limited goal and a, and ability to get there. I don't think there's a political will for that. So I vote for these economic sanctions. I think we have underestimated because they're not sexy. They're not like a war that entertains the masses. But economic sanctions
hurt them. Better than a pajamagram.
Well, I think
and making light of this.
No, I'm not.
and if you follow the excellent New York Times article on who's buying apartments in New York City, upscale $25 million apartments, guess who? Many of the very people we're conducting, we're singling out for sanctions in the first place. Some of the oligarchs. So this is a pretty complicated story.
Yeah, they bought those apartments in the past. They were definitely money laundering, and so it's right that I'm not surprised they're the ones owning the apartments. These are the ones we should be targeting, and indeed now we finally are.
I want to thank everybody who has written us so far. You can still write. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. To our panelists, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo, I simply wish you a very happy Valentine's Day weekend.
You too.
How lovely.
Yes. Won't you be my Valentine? We'll be back with more. We're going to talk a lot about Valentine's Day and love and the heart and other gross things over the next 2 hours. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.